You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have Ellen Brown with me. It seems like a number of years since Ellen was with me last on this show, so perhaps I should just tell you a little bit about her. She is an author, political candidate, attorney, public speaker, and advocate of alternative medicine and financial reform, most prominently public banking. She is the founder and chairman of the Public Banking Institute. That's a nonpartisan think tank devoted to creation of publicly run banks. She is also the president of Third Millennium Press and is the author of 13 books, including Web of Debt. That's the one she's talked to us about in the past on this show, and The Public Bank Solution, as well as over 300 published articles. She has appeared in New York Times, Huffington Post, Common Dreams, a number of different publications, Asian Times, another one. So she's very well known around literary circles, and we're really happy to have her with us again. Her most recent book, published in 2019, is Banking on the People, Democratizing Money in the Digital Age. And you can catch Ellen's blog at ellenbrown.com. And the Public Banking Institute is at publicbankinginstitute.org. And she can also be heard biweekly on a radio show. It's Our Money with Ellen Brown. Thanks for joining us again, Ellen.
Thanks, Jay. Good to talk to you.
It's really good to hear your voice again. And yes, I think because this isn't so much in the news right now, the war, and I think the part of the war that most Americans aren't really paying much attention to because the media doesn't talk to us about it, and that is the financial, the economic side of the war. Somehow we are taught here that we're told and asked to believe that the sanctions are really going to destroy Mr. Putin, and Russia is a basket case economy and all that. Somehow it doesn't ring completely true to me. But anyway, today I want to focus on your essay titled The Coming Global Financial Revolution, Russia is Following the American Playbook. And well, you started out your article by writing the following. You say, foreign critics have long chafed at the exorbitant privilege of the U.S. dollar as global reserve currency. The U.S. can issue this currency backed by nothing but the full faith and credit of the United States. Foreign governments needing dollars not only accept them in trade, but buy U.S. securities with them, effectively funding the U.S. government and its foreign wars. But no government has been powerful enough to break through that arrangement until now. How did that happen, and what will it mean for the U.S. and the global economies? So for those who may not understand how the U.S. dollar became the world's reserve currency, maybe you could start out by explaining that, and then why foreign governments have been unhappy about it.
Okay, well, of course, in the 19th century, all the way up till 1933, we were on a gold standard where you could take your dollars to a bank and cash them in for gold. And in 1933, Roosevelt took the dollar off the gold standard domestically, but nations could still cash in their reserves, their dollar reserves for gold, and with the U.S. Treasury. And so in 1944, after World War II, the U.S. had the most gold of any country in the world, and so it was agreed that the dollar and gold would be the global reserve currency. So it would be a gold-backed dollar. Other countries could cash in their dollars for gold. And that worked all the way up until 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window, and that was because we were spending a lot of money, and French President de Gaulle could see that believed we were running out of gold, and so He cashed in a good portion of France's reserves for gold and was threatening to cash in the rest. And the UK was threatening to do the same thing. And I think Italy cashed theirs in. Anyway, so our gold was being depleted. And so President Nixon closed the gold window, meaning you couldn't cash in your dollars anymore. And, of course, the dollar then plummeted, predictably, and to prop it back up, Henry Kissinger, who was then Treasury Secretary, along with Nixon, made a deal with the Saudi Arabia and the OPEC countries that they would sell their oil only in gold. So that meant other countries, only in dollars. So
in
that
dollars,
meant other,
yeah.
sorry, had to get... had to get dollars in order to buy oil, and everybody, of course, needs oil. And the deal was that we would back the OPEC countries militarily, and mm-hmm. there's pretty good evidence that Kissinger also said, we are going to quadruple the price of oil. You will be very rich. And that did happen. The price of oil, mm-hmm. The price of oil shot up by four times after mm-hmm. this little nine-day Arab-Israel war. And so that deal held until 2000 when Saddam Hussein started selling oil in euros. The euro had just, just come online the previous few years.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Gaddafi did the same thing in Libya, and we both those countries obviously wound up in wars with the U.S. and got devastated, and their leaders got killed. And Gaddafi was planning to actually break away from the whole Western system, or he was attempting to mobilize the other African countries in an African system where they would have a gold-backed currency. And Gaddafi, of course, had a lot of gold, so he could actually have done it. And they would pull out of the IMF and the World Bank and just start their own system, which certainly would have been good for Africa, but that obviously failed, and we wound up with Gaddafi. Nobody really knows, I think, what happened to Gaddafi's gold. So nobody's been able to break that system until now. No major world power has challenged it, but now Russia has challenged it, of course, now that we have this war going on in Ukraine, and it started with the financial part of it started with the Western powers sanctioning Russia, including freezing nearly half of their financial reserves, I think about mm-hmm. $300 billion worth, expelling the largest banks from the SWIFT global payment system, export controls on advanced technologies, personal sanctions against senior officials and oligarchs. So with all that, the ruble crashed, just like the dollar had crashed. And Russia, President Putin, did the same thing that we did, essentially, which mm-hmm. was back the ruble with gas originally and mm-hmm. then oil. So what they said was, we will sell you our gas only in rubles for the unfriendly countries. The rubles are gold, so the unfriendly countries were all the ones that had sanctioned Russia, and that included 48 countries, the G7 countries, so it would be, Europe, the U.S., Canada, Japan, and for countries that were friendly or that hadn't engaged in these sanctions or agreed to the sanctions, they could use local currencies. I don't know that they could all use their local currencies, but there's a deal with India to sell gas in rupees, and a deal with China to sell gas in yuan, and with Turkey in lira. So they're using their own national currencies or it was said they might consider Bitcoin, or they could, of course, use gold.
Mm-hmm.
And then the G7 countries said that refused to do it originally, said that Russia was in breach of their existing contracts to sell gas to Europe in dollars or euros.
Yeah.
And when Russian officials said, well, we're not in the business of giving away gas for free. You know, what are we going to do with the dollars if you don't let it, or the dollars or euros if you're not going to let us spend them?
So, exactly.
It looks, you know, I suspect eventually they'll come around to use it. There is a way that they can do it now where they're effectively using their euros, but the euros get converted into rubles in a particular bank that they can use.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this new arrangement where gold is also linked to gas or oil. So Russia then expanded that to include not just gas, but oil, and they've said that they may expand it to include other things like their grains and metals, and there's some pretty important things that are rare earth metals, that sort of thing, that we really do need. So, like titanium, palladium,
right.
Nitrogen,
yeah.
We need stuff for fertilizers. So we are rather shooting ourselves in the foot by saying, you know, we're not going to buy your products, and therefore we're going to hurt you. In fact, we need those products. So anyway, that is the issue. And then there's this possible, or there was this link to gold. It wasn't exact. Some people are calling it a gold-backed ruble, but it's not the same as the arrangement with gold-backed dollars, where it would work either way. In other words, Russia was saying they would sell they would buy gold at 5,000 rubles a gram, but it didn't work the other way. In other words, they weren't going to sell it at that price at that time. Now, when they first said that 5,000 rubles was less than the spot price, but now the ruble has gotten stronger, and so they changed the deal. First, they said they would do that until June 30th, and now they've said it's a negotiated price, which apparently they're letting it float because the ruble's gotten so strong, they've got to, you know, be in step with the market more.
You know, Ellen, I'd like to go back a little bit to the origins of the U.S. going to converting from the gold-backed system that Nixon took us off of to the petrodollar. First of all, we were spending a lot of money in those days on Vietnam and on socialism. It was, guns and butter. It was Vietnam, and it was also Lyndon Johnson's Great Society program. And the politicians, Johnson and Nixon after that, knew that they couldn't tax the American people. Politically, it wouldn't be feasible to tax them to pay for this. So we started printing money or issuing debt, essentially. Who was driving this thing? I mean, why did the country decide to live beyond its means the way it did? Who was behind, let's say, the war in Vietnam? We were really afraid that there was the Russian was a threat to us at that stage.
I don't think Russia. I mean, Vietnam was certainly, or the part that we were at war with was certainly a communist country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
I was in college then in Berkeley, and I did take to the streets along with a lot of other students. I mean, we were
of course, of course,
that war.
Absolutely. Many of us were, and but there was, I mean, clearly there was somebody was pushing for the war. And I think the draft was on and wasn't very popular with students for obvious reasons. But then anyway, we went down that path, and because we couldn't finance it, we decided to essentially break, and Nixon decided to break from the dollar, or the gold from the dollar, and do what essentially was, in my mind, what is counterfeit currency. There's no longer any intrinsic value behind the dollar other than our military forces other countries to use the dollar to buy our product, not our product even, just to buy oil. Some of it was ours, but, and as you pointed out, countries around the world, most countries have to import oil. They don't produce it themselves. And so that made a tremendous, that increased the constant bid for the dollar. And so from a, you know, from a moral point of view, it seems to me what we did was not all that pure. I mean, in my way of thinking, we should have stuck and stayed within our means and lived within our means. And we wouldn't have had to, we could have been, you know, we could have continued with an honest currency system.
I would agree. Well, I think the dollar is backed by something. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. I mean, what it is sort of just a measure of value, or it's just saying we the people. Well, it goes all the way back to the paper script of the American colonists. It's basically we the government acknowledge that you have given us goods and services in X amount, and this. We, the people of the country or of the colony, agree to accept it in trade at that value. So it's mm-hmm. good as long as you keep your promise. But obviously, we've broken our promise. It's not the first time with Russia. We had broken our promise various times. But this is the one that someone was powerful enough to call us on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no longer... Well, what it once was, which, I mean, it worked perfectly well globally, it seems to me, except for the fact, I mean, it did certainly give us an advantage, but it gave our government an advantage to make a lot of money for fighting wars, but mm-hmm. we, the people, got the manufacturing base was squeezed out because mm-hmm. Foreigners needed our dollars, and therefore they sold to us cheaply, and it did drive up our debt to $30 trillion because mm-hmm. the rest of the world needed dollars. And so we always had a balance of payments problem where we're always shipping more dollars out than bringing goods in, bringing more goods in than
we're selling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we ran these, so we run these chronic trade deficits. And China, on the other hand, is running trade surpluses decade after decade, or at least over the last couple of decades. And they are in a position where they own, I think, something like $1 trillion still, but other currencies as well, which they're using to buy up things around the world. And they clearly are working closely with Russia. Russia has the raw materials that China can use for its manufacturing base. And so... Mm-hmm. It is just. I don't know that I would agree with you that the dollar has. I mean, we really have lost purchasing power, tremendous purchasing power, and as you say, it redistributed wealth to the people that were closest to the handouts, the government spending for wars and other social things, I would say. But anyway, so now Putin is doing the same thing that we did, and I don't know why. Do you think that our leaders just don't think that that's important? Do they really believe that Russia's economy is worthless and that we can just destroy them that way?
Well, that seemed to have been the thought. But who are our leaders? I don't know. Do you follow Tom Luongo at all?
Yes, yes.
It's the Davos crowd, and they're behind it all, and that they're trying to destroy the U.S. economy along with, it's like the global reset. Once debts get so high that they can't be repaid, which is what's happened now, and it's happened periodically, historically, you have to do a reset. You have to push the button and start all over again. And what they want to do is reset with the same program. In other words, they're still in control, and mm-hmm. we're still the serfs at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And so that's the stage we're at now, where they're trying to wipe everybody out. I mean, it certainly looks that way. What is the point of cutting yourself off from... We have our own oil, obviously, but we've shut that down. And we're shutting down farmland and doing all sorts of things just don't seem reasonable if your real goal is to serve the people, which is what, of course, we try to do at the Public Banking Institute. I mean, that's, I think you can you can use the same banking system, but it needs to be redesigned so it does serve the people and so that it stays within the local economy. In other words, you can leverage your money, or what money is. We now know that all money is created by banks when they make loans, mm-hmm. essentially. And so all they do is write it in their books, and the money goes out, the credit goes out, like to make those 12,000 miles of high-speed rail that China made in 10 years. Mm-hmm. They own the banks, or they own their own infrastructure banks, so they can issue the money, just write it on their books, build the stuff, and then the fees from the trains pay back the loan. And that's the way it should work. That's what credit should, that's what money should be. It seems to me credit that goes out and does something productive in the society. And then uh-huh. it works. Then it's not inflationary.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the system we have right now, unfortunately, is kind of eating us up along with everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Ellen. Davos, I think, might include China and Russia, no?
I think it is alleged. I'm mm-hmm. obviously not close to that, but it is alleged that every country has its deep state, fifth column mm-hmm. or sixth column or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so they're all getting manipulated at some level.
So, I mean, it's been throughout human history. Powerful people try to get more powerful. Powerful empires try to grow until they can't any longer, until something shuts them down. It would seem to me that what might be happening here are different factions within this desire to have global dominance, that we're seeing the battles against each other to try to gain that top spot. Do you see it that way?
Yes, but hopefully the good of it, I always try to end on a positive note or something.
Yeah.
Hopefully the good of it is all these things are getting exposed. It's mm-hmm. becoming so obvious that we're just not acting rationally or not acting in the best interests of the country itself. So
mm-hmm.
It really is a political problem, but how we redesign the political system, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Well, I just wonder, you know, to what extent, I mean, which side is going to win? Clearly, Germany, Hungary, I think, is buying oil from Russia. They've decided that they will pay them in rubles. Italy is dependent. Some of these countries in Europe are so dependent on Russian energy. You have to wonder to what extent they can go along with it. Are there wheels of industry going to shut down? People going to freeze to death? You know, I mean, it's really the people in Europe seem to be between a rock and a hard place right now.
Right, and apparently the hope was that Russia's economy would be crushed and it would all be over by winter or by fall, mm-hmm. you know, when it gets cold, but mm-hmm. it's certainly not looking that way. I don't know how many homes have wood-burning stoves, but they certainly mm-hmm. need something like that.
They need something like that. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. It'd be so much more I'd like to ask you about maybe another time. Ellen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay. Lovely talking to you.
Thank you. And we'll do it again sometime soon, I hope. All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, John Rubino and Michael Oliver return. And for the first time, Nick Rodway will join me to talk about his exciting project that they're running, an exploration project in British Columbia. That's Core Assets Corporation, Nick Rodway. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor.